Hey guys, welcome in to the Wednesday night Longhorn live stream. My name is Jerry Hamilton. I'm joined by two bad golfers, but two great guys, CJ Vogel and Rod Babers. And I'm guessing they're bad golfers based on my conversation with CJ Saturday. And Rod never talks about golf, so this is a total ringer. We're going with bad golfers, great guys. But damn two awesome. Really good coverage guys, CJ in recruiting and football, and Rod at cornerback. Even though Roy Williams talked a little trash, Rod.
I like that.
Hey, did you go back and watch the video?
I did, man. That was a great interview. It was awesome. And yeah, man, it was worth your time. You haven't seen it, guys. It's fantastic. I appreciate some of the kind things they said.
Rod got a lot of love there. He got a lot of love. Yeah, I thought it was funny how Roy talked about Jammer kind of bullying him up after that 80-yard catch on the glance rally in the spring game.
Hey, going against Jammer every day. I forgot about that, man, for Roy Williams, man. That right there was – I don't know if he faced a tougher corner any of his time as a college player than he faced in practice versus Jammer, truth be told.
Yeah, there's no doubt about it. Yeah. All right, guys, we got a lot to talk about tonight. The main thing I want to say is we want to take all you guys' questions. So whatever you got, throw them at us. We're going to take a look. What we're going to do, we're going to take a look at some linebackers tonight as we get into the show. We're going to – because two guys are visiting this weekend. Elijah Barnes committed to Texas. Tremendous, tremendous prospect. By the way, I think he's going to join Rod and CJ on the winning drive tomorrow afternoon for an interview before his official visit. And then we're going to take a look at Madden Foramo, the linebacker out of San Juan Capistrano, who's one of my favorite guys that Texas is pursuing. I don't know if Rod's seen the tape, but I hope he has it so he can watch it live with us and get his reaction on Madden Foramo. I think Rod's going to be a big fan of Madden Foramo. We're going to talk a little linebackers. We're going to talk a little bit of Nick Townsend tonight as well, because that's a huge official visit coming for Texas. That is the guy, I think the number one target at tight end has been for a while. Texas would tell him, hey, if you want to play edge, too, whatever you want to play, we just want you at Texas. That's what Texas is telling Nick Townsend, who Alabama is all over. Alabama's told Nick Townsend, you're the only tight end we'll take in the class if you come here. So what do people think of Nick Townsend, college coaches? There you go. We're going to watch a little bit of his video. Get some thoughts from Rod. CJ, we'll talk about that. So we're taking your questions. Talking recruiting. Obviously, three defensive backs on campus right now. CJ, we'll start with this. KD, 35, I am the best. Any updates on Brew and Lee? Seen some Twitter posts.
Yeah, absolutely. Dorian Brew got to check out DKR last night as these guys kind of filtered in the official visits. Of course, got to spend time with Steve Sarkisian. Also got to spend time with Jalen Gilbo. We saw the video post on Gilbo's story on Instagram of the two of them, you know, going through their photo shoots. Dorian Brew was all, you know, decked out in his Texas uniform. And Gilbo is one of the guys there that's also very much involved in this recruitment, hosting this weekend as well. Two Houston quarterbacks, two guys that are very familiar with the University of Texas, clearly. But I'm really interested to see what comes out of this visit for Dijon Lee here. Of course, he's a guy that Texas has a lot of work to do in this recruitment. Coming in, Dorian Brew already had a top four figured out. And you see the photo here. Also, by the way, the graphics this year for the player photo shoots, they look pretty sweet.
It looks like something producer Matt would do, man. That's good stuff.
Now, they look great. But Texas has some work to do with Dijon Lee. He got in yesterday afternoon around 2 p.m., 1 p.m., went straight to the downtown area, got some food with his family, and made the trip over to DKR and Moncrief for the beginning of his official visit right around 3 or 3:30. So he's been on campus. He's obviously going through the activities that they have planned. I'm not sure how different it is in the midweek. I'll have to check in versus what we've seen on the official visit weekends over the past two and this weekend upcoming. But Dijon Lee, again, Texas – they like the lengthy cornerbacks. You've seen that time and time again. 6'4", can run on the outside from the West Coast over there with Dijon Lee, but a lot of work to do. So other than that, Nathan Tillman's the other guy from Mansfield Timberview, the safety. Texas is working to flip him from SMU to get him on campus only 18 days after they originally offered him. Speaks a little bit about how quickly things are moving and progressing with his interest in the Longhorns and how much they are pushing for him. So certainly three guys that Texas is hoping to make some big steps for in that secondary to get kind of a clearer picture as we move into the month of July.
One of the interesting things today that's happened too in the world of recruiting that is something I we're going to closely follow here is, you know, USC had a big weekend in the spring, got a couple of guys from Georgia committed, two of the top D linemen in the country. And I've been saying that wasn't going to hold, that wasn't going to happen. So Justin Terry decommits. He was a one-time Georgia committed to USC, backed off that. He'll end up at Georgia, I think. Maybe not, but that's where I bet the house. Isaiah Gibson, the edge out of Warner Robins, who Texas offered early on, didn't really gain any traction with him. When he came out and had five official visits and none of them were USC, you knew this decommitment was coming. But not now, and a lot of people have asked, will Texas get on either one of these guys? I don't think so. But what was interesting is, how does this affect other guys USC's recruiting? Dorian Brew visited out there. Tristan Cashman, the corner from Upland, was on campus at Texas last weekend. He's going into USC this week. Marco Jones, CJ, Texas, Michigan, top two, going to USC this weekend. Could that help USC with Marco Jones now? I don't know. We'll see. But with the guys already committed to USC, what does that do? Or maybe some guys like Brew, who USC's had some traction with, what does that do? You lost two five-star D linemen in one day. Rod, I mean, I don't know what your reaction would be to that, but you'd be like, if you were committed to Texas back in the day and Marcus Tubbs wasn't rated that high, but Corey Redding and Marcus Tubbs checked out the same day, I say, I got a lot of work to do back here.
Yeah, man, that's something going. At least there's something going on, right? Perception is reality. So whether that's a problem or not, the belief is that, oh man, something bad is going on at USC on the defensive side of the ball.
Yeah. So, all right, before we get into your questions, because that's what we're here for, we want to take your questions. We got some great ones tonight. We got a bunch of call your shot questions starred tonight, man. Everybody wants us to call our shots. It's only June 19th, but, you know, I won't take a shot. Maybe I'll call a shot. All right, let's talk about our sponsor of tonight's On Texas Football Longhorn live stream. That's Andy Ludicky, Rod Babers.
Yeah, no question. Proud to have Andy Ludicky as a part of the On Texas Football family. If you are looking to diversify, you may be someone like me who has their hands in a lot of multiple businesses. Well, Andy can help you diversify by finding you the businesses that will fit your time allotment and financial goals. You can call him or email him to learn more about this really cool process at andy@myperfectfranchise.net. You see the number here before you, 404-973-9901. That's andy@myperfectfranchise.net. So we appreciate Andy for sponsoring our Wednesday night live stream here on Owen Texas Football.
Yeah, absolutely. Thank you very much to Andy Ludicky for that. Here's another one from Katie35. I'm the best. This is interesting too. Julian Lewis, the five-star quarterback commitment for USC, is out competing in Elite 11, which KJ Lacy was fourth place after day one in the Elite 11 competition by the guys who run Elite 11. All those guys out there, Brian Stumpf and that great team. But Julian Lewis was at Auburn last weekend. And to say Auburn's all in may be an understatement. Auburn's all in on this one. So we'll see what happens there. They have been going after Julian Lewis for quite some time at Auburn. So we'll see what happens. A little shaky out there on the West Coast right now, two five-star decommitments. As Katie said, if they lost Julian Lewis, man, that would be a major blow to USC. We're not saying that's going to happen, but we'll see how that negative momentum happens.
Jerry, I got a question for you.
Especially coming off the Auburn visit.
I got a question for you about the Elite 11. We've seen top performers from day one. We saw it from a number of different outlets, different recruiting services, ranking services, and we see it from – the Elite 11 themselves. And, you know, there's a little bit of a difference there in terms of how KJ Lacy, performed. The Elite 11 guys say that, hey, he was top five guy. He was number four yesterday. But some of these other lists don't have him mentioned at all. I mean, is there one Texas folks should put more stock into? It feels hard to disagree with the event runners right here.
I would always go with the event runners because they're in the classroom. They're going through all this stuff on a day-to-day basis, their scoring system. I'm not a big Elite 11 guy. I appreciate what it is, right? It's a great competition for quarterbacks. I'm not a big Elite 11 guy as far as I live and die by any of it. I'm just not. I mean, there's, yes, you're going to have a great Rolodex of quarterbacks out there because everybody tries to get in the Elite 11, right? And even if you worked if you worked it or whatever, you know how those things are. They can claim you were part of Elite 11. and I'm not taking a shot. It's just reality. But I'm not big. I'm not as big on the QB on air competitions as being end all be all. So that's where I kind of come out. But if you're going to follow it, I would follow the guys who run the event because they have the scoring system. They have what those guys as a team are looking for and how they grade these guys and score these guys from the classroom all the way through to the competition. So that's kind of where I come out on that a little bit. But I think it's a great discussion. Robert Pope has a super chat. Let me rip this one through this one. How many wide receivers have highs? Maybe one. All right. Let's see. Pablo, will a talented commit adversely affect Winston or Edwards? I don't think so. I think Texas wants two tight ends in this class. So, you know, the question is with Winston visiting Auburn recently, what happens there with Texas and Amari Winston? I think Texas would have a hard time turning down Nick Townsend and Caleb Edwards. I'd say that if they both want in the class. So that is going to be interesting. Oh, here's a major question for Rod Babers. Yeah, I mean, this is the toughest question of your life, Rod. Rod, who on the OTF staff has the best half?
Wow, that's tough. Honestly, I might have to go with myself. I haven't even pulled out my really nice hats. I got some hats that I didn't even. These are just, I just wear the usual. I just kind of like a rotation I wear for the live streams. But I got some CJ that y'all ain't even seen, man. I ain't even broke out yet. That's just that game day stuff and other stuff like that that I break out for special occasions. So I might just say me. I might have to say myself. I got a hat box. Y'all, you got a hat box, CJ?
Listen, I had to tone it down a little bit from what I used to have. So I found my four or five winners. The birthday's around the corner for me. So hopefully I'll get some new ones, kind of restock and come back with some heat to start July. So we'll see. But, Rod, I mean, I got to literally tip my cap to you and your hat collection.
No, there's no doubt.
Okay. And I got the Shipley. I got the Shipley Ranches. Coach hooked me up, so I got.
Now, Bobby's got the big hat, so maybe he gets a few points there too.
That's true.
But you know why Rod wins this going away? He was the first guy to wear a UT SEC hat.
Hey, it's right. I forgot about that. Still in the collection. I still got that one too.
Yeah, you're automatically the winner because you broke that out at the co-op last year.
Oh man,
on a Friday before game, so you automatically win. I mean, you got your Heisman. You got your hat Heisman on that one.
Yeah, that thing will be everywhere in like a month. But yeah, you're right. I got that from some of my booster friends, man. They've been bragging about that for a minute. But you're right, they'll be everywhere soon, so it won't even be a cool thing anymore. For
that's me. What we call the post playing days $40 handshake. All right, Kimberly has a great question. Who is emerging as the key leaders on and off the field? How are they shaping the team culture and performance? Thank you for that question, Kimberly. CJ, what are we thinking, Rod? What are we thinking on Rod? I know you talk with a lot of players on third and Longhorn doing those interviews. CJ, obviously we talk to people as well. What are we thinking right now as far as the leaders on this team?
Well, I'll tell you one in the secondary that stands out to me, and to see where he's come from, to see his journey at the University of Texas, and to become one of the biggest team leaders, it's a pretty remarkable story. It's Michael Pfaff. I mean, I got to speak with him a little bit earlier this summer in a workout with Bam down in the Austin area, a great DB trainer down in Central Texas. Michael Pfaff sat there and said, you know what, I don't care how I play. If we win, that's exactly what I want to hear. That, I mean, he was – you know, saying all the right things. And I think that's exactly the kind of person that he is. You go level for level for level on the defensive side of the ball. I think Michael Pfaff in the secondary is a big one. I think Anthony Hill's a big one in the middle linebacker spot. And then Baron Sorrell, you know, for all the talk about that edge room and the steps that it's taken this offseason, he's a guy that's been around the block for multiple years now as a starter, as a guy that's been around the offseason workouts. To see newcomers come in with, whether it be the emergence of a Colton Vosick, a freshman in Colin Simmons and Zeno Umeozula, and of course, portal guy with Trey Moore. I mean, the constant there has been Baron Sorrell. So defensively, those are my three on the offensive side of the ball. I think you have to look at Jake Majors right there. And we've heard great things about Matthew Golden, Jerry, in terms of what he's been able to do early with that almost completely rebuilt wide receiver room. He's been a vocal piece and a guy that has, again, some skins on his wall to say this is the way you go about being a college athlete that I think some of the younger kids are kind of taking a liking to at the moment.
Yeah, I can remember covering Matthew Golden in high school. He's a serious guy, Rod. He's a serious guy. Here's a question I wanted to ask you, Rod, before you get to your thoughts, too, because I know you got a couple of thoughts on this. Trey Moore, You heard what Sark kind of way he kind of talked about him in press conferences. Yeah. It's almost like this guy could come in out of the portal and be part of the leadership group of this team. I want to ask you, from a guy that played and we're in the locker rooms, how hard would that actually be for a guy to come in? Now, you didn't play in the portal days, but to come in and kind of on a team that was already really good and really talented, even though he's an older guy, be a strong voice and somebody that could be on a leadership council of this team.
Yeah, and with a team that doesn't have a leadership void, as you talked about, right? They have a good culture. They have great leadership kind of coming back, and yet he's been able to earn the respect of his teammates. That's number one, right? And he did that in the offseason. That's by showing up on time to workouts, by having a really good attitude, by having a high energy level, making players match your intensity. That means he's going out there and guys are having to match his intensity, and he's earning the respect of his teammates through workouts. And then in the spring, obviously the way that he, played during the spring, the way he practiced during the spring, I think that's what stood out to Sark. Sark kind of described him as a pro, kind of bringing in a guy who's got a professional attitude, who's got a professional demeanor and disposition, very businesslike. And then you talk about, like you said, his leadership skill as well. I expect a couple of guys who are coming in. You brought up Matthew Golden, Trey Moore being another one. I think Makuba should be another one of those guys that comes in and should be a leader instantly. These guys played in big games. This guy started for one of the best football programs in the country at Clemson. And what do y'all want to think about Dabo now? What are you even saying?
But still, right, no, but they are what they are. Yeah.
Yes, but they have been, and he proved himself at a really high level. I expect Makuba to come in here with, some skins on the wall. He's got some clout. I expect him to be a leader in that secondary, along with Jahdae Barron. That's another guy that I would add to the list that I expect to be a leader that I've heard really good things about. And I know everybody on that team looks up and respects him. Another guy who's kind of underrated. And what I love about Texas culture is that you have these guys who become transcendent leaders. They become culture bearers, guys who, epitomize the culture. They live it, walk it, talk it, everyday habits. Guys like Roshan and guys like Jay Witt. And they're not even the mainline starters, right? Yeah. They're not even the guys who are considered the top guys at their position. And yet they've been able to kind of help cultivate this culture of leadership. And they get a lot of love from the coaches as a result of that. And I think what it does for the kind of future of the team in terms of guys who are looking at that example of Jay Witt and Roshan Johnson, they know that, hey, even if I'm not the frontline starter and I'm not a star on the team yet, I can still be a leader. I can still be a leader and I can still get recognized as a leader because you've seen that from other guys. And you bring up Michael Taft. I think Michael Taft kind of represents that now. I don't think he's going to be the frontline starter when things are said and done. I think he'll be obviously a contributor and a guy that a rotational player in the secondary. But I think everybody looks at him now as someone who earned their position. And now he's got a lot of respect among his teammates. He's got a lot of street cred because of the way that he plays and earning his scholarship as a walk-on. But yet, I don't think he's necessarily the star of the secondary. So it's very unique at Texas where you can be a leader, but you don't necessarily have to be a star to be considered a well-respected leader and a recognized leader. And I think a lot of guys, they want to be in that role where they can lead by example.
Do we underestimate Kelvin Banks as a leader, maybe because he's a left tackle and they're rarely in leadership roles? But I don't know, guys. I feel like we may not be giving him enough credit as a leader on this team and in this program right now. What say y'all? It's just a feeling I get, guys. I mean, left tackles don't get that type of leadership exposure, right? But there's something telling me this guy's a better and more important leader in this program than we give him credit for.
I think you're absolutely right. And I think that stems from stepping in day one as a true freshman and starting. You know, if you go back to that 2022 Red River shootout game, I believe it was the first play the Longhorns had in the red zone. Who was driving a linebacker back from Oklahoma into the end zone to get the team fired up, to kind of set that tone of what that first half ended up being, right? It was Kelvin Banks. And to start that out, and of course to have started the last two seasons, to have not missed a game, to have come in and lived up to that five-star expectation, he lives it. He lives coming in and letting his play do the talk, setting that example for the young guys, and of course for his line in general, which is expected to be very good. He's the cornerstone per se, and I think you're absolutely right, Jerry, that he doesn't get a lot of love because I think you don't see him as a vocal guy. But behind the scenes, there's not a guy who doesn't do things the right way more than a Kelvin Banks.
Yeah. I want to bring this up so we can knock this one out real quick. Zachary Delgado, he was at, was the DBL number. No, that was a fake account. That was not real. But I did almost respond to that with a picture of like 80 Lamborghinis, but I decided no, people think it's real. So I did not. I held back on that one. But no, that was not real. All right, here's Zane Petty wanting us to all call shots tonight. Now, Rod's out of this question. Thank goodness for you, Rod. You don't have to try to answer this one. All right, GH, Josiah Sharma, Myron Charles, Brandon Brown, Javian Hilson, call your shot. Not difficult at all. You know, just four of the best D linemen in the country. I think Texas will get at least two of those guys. That's what I say on that list. Sharma was at Oregon last weekend. He goes to Bama this weekend. Myron Charles was at Miami last weekend. He's at FSU this weekend. By the way, Sark had a great call with Myron and his people this week earlier on Monday. And that communication has picked up even more with Texas since the official visit. That's normally a good sign. Does that mean Texas is going to get him? I'm not saying that. Does that mean Texas is right there duking it out with the boys in Tallahassee? That is what that means. Now, him, Javion Hilson, committed to FSU currently, will be on campus this weekend. I think Javion Hilson's mom, she stayed steadfast. She would like her son to get out of Florida and have a different experience for college. That's probably why he initially committed to Bama before Nick decided to go play golf at Medalist with Tiger and the boys. So I think that, you know, is that why he was committed to Alabama at one time? Then he flipped to Florida State after Nick Saban retired. So we'll see there. Then Brandon Brown, I think Brandon Brown really likes the idea of playing at Texas, guys. Does that mean Texas is going to win out? Somebody in that family, I think, really has a strong relationship with Bo Davis because Bo believed in their son early on when some people were saying it was too short, which was ridiculous, by the way. But that's another story. Brandon's scheduled to go to Oklahoma this weekend. I don't believe his mom's making that visit as of yesterday. So I think this one's still going to come down to Texas and LSU for Brandon. But I think four. All right, Zane, I'm throwing this one to you, CJ. Go for it. Man. Matt or Pettijohn, if you only have one.
That's tough.
I mean, that's, I mean, what is that like? Which steak at Ruth's Chris?
At Lamborghini or Ferrari.
It's time to the Madden for Amo video for Rod, by the way, Matt.
I haven't seen it.
That kid can fly around. Listen, both of them can. And I say, having seen Pettijohn in person, I'll side with him because I've seen what he can do in person. You know, he is a true 6'2". That 10.7, 10.8 speed jumps off the page, and he can lay the wood. I'm not saying Matt Faremo can't, because again, this is the tape right here. This guy can play some football, but to play in the middle of the field, I like more of what Pettijohn can do. I think there's a little bit more feistiness in his game, but my goodness, it's tough to see the side to side or sideline to sideline range right here from Faremo and say, you know, one of these guys is a do or die, can't live without him. They're both extremely talented. That's a tough question.
Rod, watch this guy when he makes a decision and he goes, and when he hits you, the play's over, even with a cast on. I mean, he is a hellacious linebacker prospect, considered a Notre Dame lean going into this weekend. But this is a Johnny Nansen special. This guy wouldn't be on campus if Johnny Nansen hadn't been hired. If Framo, one of the top linebackers in the country, you know, you look at him, Elijah Barnes, and Pettijohn, and Texas has three of the very top linebackers in the country that are visiting. And then you have Jonathan Cunningham as the fourth guy under consideration for Texas. But initial thoughts on Faremo, Rod?
I like how decisive he is, as you brought up. I mean, he's decisive. And once he decides he's gone, he's a blur.
Yeah. Jerry, is he a true middle linebacker to you?
Do I think he's a middle linebacker?
Yeah.
It looks like he can play a little bit of both. He can play on the outside, or he can play inside the middle linebacker. How big is he? What's his size?
He's about 6'3", 220 right now.
He's a big dude.
Damn, he is big.
First watched him, I said, this is a bigger frame
version like that.
Leonga LaFalle, you know, because he plays in space so well, and he's so decisive. He's instinctive, and he can play in space.
He's a blur. He really is. Like, once he gets going – he's impressive. I would play him. Yeah, you can play him inside. He's so damn big. I didn't realize he was that big. But you can you're moving guys around anyway. I mean, you're moving guys around the edge. You're putting them off-ball linebackers. Ideally, you'd like them to move around a little bit anyway. And he can do it. He's a spread baby. You can tell.
Yeah.
He's comfortable in space.
Yeah. And so he'll be on campus this weekend, considering Notre Dame lean. But Madden Faramo, this is Johnny Nansen special, man. I mean, again, for Texas fans, the importance of this Johnny Nansen hire and how shrewd it was by Sarkisian, it opened up California even more. I think, you know, if this is the early returns on Johnny Nansen, Josiah Sharma getting in the game there, Madden Faramo getting him on campus. Let's watch Matea Taigoai, or however you pronounce his name, from San Clemente, the linebacker who's an absolute stud, committed to USC. Let's see what happens this year with that, with USC a little bit. If Texas doesn't fill this class at linebacker, let's keep an eye on that one too throughout the season, because these guys recruit through the whistle. But Johnny Nansen, obviously, Tristan Castro, the corner, getting him on campus. Johnny Nansen's done a lot of work here for Texas in a short amount of time. That's a really good show for what's going to happen in the future. There he's playing safety. I mean, this goes on and on, right?
And Jerry, I was talking to Silas Bowden for the Third Longhorns podcast. Shout out to my man Nick Shuley, Derek Johnson, Alex Okafor, Fozzie Whitaker, and Jeremy Hills and the crew. And he said that Johnny Nance is the one that recommended him.
Yeah.
He said that was the initial recommendation to the Texas coaches was from Johnny Nansen about Silas Bowden. So, and we learned that JVN Cole, he was the first contacted by Johnny Nansen too. And then you throw in the 3D tackles on top of that. So in addition to what you're talking about, opening up traditional recruiting,
man,
he's already putting in major work via transfer portal. His impact in talent acquisition has already been unbelievable. It's been tremendous. And you're talking about the X and O's and the schematic, addition that he's going to be. But it's pretty impressive.
That's a great point, Rod, because it's one thing, like Sark has his connection in SoCal, but he's a head coach. He's limited, right, with that. Chris Jackson graduated from Modern Day. He's been in Phoenix and East, though, right? I mean, he's got connections, but that's different from Johnny Nansen, who's been a position coach or D coordinator for two decades recruiting in California. He literally knows everybody at this point. So, I mean, that is the difference there, is Johnny Nansen's impact. To your point, Rod, if somebody jumps in the portal and this guy's really good, Johnny Nansen's going to have a contact somewhere in that Rolodex. And that's very, very invaluable. All right, I'll take this last call, your shot from Zane Petty. Lockett Frenchmore, I put out an article on Texas Football. I upped my percent today on TexasFootball.com. I upped my percentage from 65 to 75 on DeCorian Moore. I'm out there. I'm on the limb, baby. I'm on the limb. Wind don't blow too hard in Eugene this weekend. I'm on the limb. I believe it. I think Jamie French is a better chance for Texas than Kalik Lockett going into this visit weekend. Watch out for A&M with Lockett. FSU and Alabama are in it as well. By the way, it's interesting when Alabama popped up, because when I'd watched Kalik Lockett, one of the guys that I thought he reminded me of or had some of in his game was Jalen Polk from Washington. Because Polk's not a burner. I think he ran 4.52 at the combine. So he's 4.52, 4.55 guy. He doesn't overwhelm you with speed and that explosive athleticism, but he's got an unbelievable catch rate. He's big hands, great body control. That's what Kalik Lockett is to me. So when Kalen DeBoer kind of zeroed in, tried to get Lockett on campus, I was like, yeah, you know, it kind of fits. He looks like one of the guys that was on that national runner-up team to me. So that does not surprise me at all. All right, guys, you're watching the Longhorn live stream. Thank you, everybody, for tuning in. Rod won best hats because he had the SEC Texas hat first. That was a runaway winner. Somebody's saying Justice Terry scheduled an OV to Bama this weekend. Yeah, I mean, look, so Justice Terry, Sharma, I don't know if that'll make a difference. I think Bama's kind of getting their NIL together, though. Something to watch there. They're getting it together a little bit. We'll see. Zane Petty says, if A&M got Kelshon and Lockett, that'd be a good haul for them. That'd be a tremendous haul for A&M if those things happen. So we'll see. I think Kelshon Johnson, I know people have put in picks there for A&M. I was around yesterday for a couple hours, and I think it's still in the balance. I think it's in the balance a little bit, and we'll see what happens here So what CJ, what's going to be so interesting with a lot of these recruitments, because they're all going to hit that first and second week in July, and there may be a few that come late June, is the timing of everything. That's what Texas is going to have to make a couple of choices here within the timing of some of these commitments, because there are, you can't take everybody.
Right.
You have to make decisions. You have to make NIL decisions. You have to make position decisions. So the timing of a lot of this is going to be interesting to follow for all of us.
Yeah, that's going to be kind of the big, determining factor for me is, do you see timelines get pushed up? Do you see decisions be announced via Twitter, social media, whatever? A timeline change might speed up the process for a number of kids. Big picture wise, I think Texas won't go wrong if you're the University of Texas based off of who you've had on campus for official visits, who you're in great contention with at the moment. The question is, who are going to be those second, third, fourth options potentially? I think we all see the writing on the wall. Texas went all in for DeCorian Moore, and I think right now, barring a late push from Oregon, something that I think they would have to absolutely knock out of the park, Longhorns are going to be in a great shape for DeCorian Moore going into July regardless. Now, the question is, when does he announce? Because he will take up a spot, but of course, Jamie French is that next guy up for me. And then what happens with Kalik Lockett? What happens with Kelshawn Johnson? And then that trickles down to a Dalen McCutcheon and a Tanuk Hines. And I'm a big fan of Tanuk Hines. I think he's one of the more underrated pass catchers in this class. I think when you watch the tape, there were a few clips that came out from 7-on-7 earlier this week of him just one hand, stick it up, come down with it. You know, he's got that underrated catchability. He's got 10-4-5 speed as well. The difference between him and Kelshawn Johnson in my eyes is I think there's a little bit more home run ability with Kelshawn Johnson, but I think that sure-handedness with Tanuk puts him over that edge just a little bit. But hey, if you're drawing comparisons from the high school ranks to Xavier Worthy and what you could potentially do in a Texas offense, very hard to say no, that's for sure. So I think Texas is going to be in a great spot. I put this up on texasfootball.com the other day. I think if you handicap it right now, Texas looks like they're in great spots for DeCorian Moore, great spot for Jamie French. I think it's 50-50 right now for Kelshawn Johnson. And I think Texas is fighting a little bit behind going into this weekend for Kalik Lockett.
Yeah, I've been on board with this the whole time. And Kalik Lockett's ranked as a 5-star. I mean, he's a 4-star for us. I think he's a very good player. But I've been on board with this. I don't think Texas is going to get all three of those guys the whole way. Maybe Sark pulls the rabbit out of his hat. I'll be surprised a little bit. Travis R. had a question here. 24/7 has Keyote listed as a DL. They're wrong. That's tied in. Now, that's just what 24/7 may like him as, his upside as a prospect. But A&M recruited him as a tied in because when I talked to Nick Townsend earlier this week, he said A&M's pitch was you and Keyote Armstrong can make this the best tied in room in the country. So just to answer that question right there. So what we shall see what happens. Let's see. Thunder Pup has this comment. I bet Sharma goes to Texas, easier for him to see games and flying. Well, look, what's interesting there is, you know, the mom lived in Arlington for a couple of years when Josiah was either fourth, fifth grade, fifth, sixth grade, right around there. Their mom's originally from the Bay Area. There's some chance she can move back to Arlington, a chance, and I'm not saying it's happening. I don't think that would have any bearing on him going to Texas or not, by the way. I just think, look, I think the toughest thing – the hardest thing for all these kids in recruiting is to say no to the people, Rod went through it, that they have the long-term relationships with.
Yep.
Kalen DeBoer and the GM of Alabama, Courtney Morgan, have been on Sharma longer than anybody. And that is ultimately, if he does not go to Bama, that will ultimately be the toughest call he has to make. Rod, could you imagine calling Tim Brewster and telling him no coming out of high school?
Man, hard to tell Brew no. I didn't.
Exactly.
I mean that is tough when you have to. I had to call coaches that I really liked, thought they were great, and really, other than me just liking another school more, there was nothing really wrong with their pitch or their program. And I had to, as a 17-18 year old kid, I had to tell them no. That was a hard thing to do. So I do understand how difficult that could be for a young person who's not necessarily used to disappointing people, right? Like that's basically what they're very disappointed, man. They'll let you know that. But the cool ones, they try not to make you feel too much guilt about it.
Yeah.
And these days, by the way, these days is different than my day, because that's right. Now you have the transfer portal. So finishing second in recruiting And second in that recruitment, it isn't as disappointing as it used to be. It used to be like, oh, I'll never see that guy again. Now it's like, no, I might. It's about a 50% chance I'll see you later.
Rod, that's a great point. The way you handle your initial loss in recruiting is so important now because of the portal. That's a great point. Big push for Townsend this weekend. Yeah, I think he's been the number one tight end on the board for a while. So I think that'll be Robert Pope here has a super chat. That's an interesting one. Fun question for the chat. In high school, the best player you played against at? Me at Killeen High School played versus Armstead on Friday Night Lights.
Oh, that's good.
So that's a really good question, guys.
That is
Rod, man.
That is a good question. Man, you know what? It's easy for me, actually. It was, we played North Shore my sophomore year, but that was the year they were loaded. You remember Cedric Comer was on that team?
Oh, yeah.
Quarterback, I believe, was it LeVar?
LeVar Johnson was a running back who went to LSU.
Yeah, man, they were loaded. Joe Walker was on that team, if I'm not mistaken.
Corey Redding was a
So I don't know about one person, but that team was loaded. We upset Katie, and the gift we got was facing that North Shore team. And we got mollywop, man. We got that team was so they were so stacked though. I as a young player, I just remember looking at that team going, damn, I hope we're one day that we're even close to that good. We were never that good. I think they had like six or seven like D1 prospects on that one team.
Yeah. What's interesting about that team, that North Shore team, they lost to Converse Judson. I believe that was in Rice Stadium. The only reason they lost and didn't win state that year, in my opinion. Cedric Cormier got a concussion returning the opening kickoff of that game. You remember this, Rod?
Yeah, man. You're right. Yeah.
And that was it in that game because he played quarterback. He kind of did it all. And when they lost him on the first play of that game, it was over. And North Shore's gone on to have some great teams. This one's good. I wasn't thinking of basketball, but good one. That's good, man. If you played in Waco, I saw A.J. Abrams in a playoff game in Waco, Daddy Trill. If that was you, let me know, or let us know where you played high school ball at. CJ, what you got? Because mine's going to be a little different. My answer is going to be a little different for a different reason.
Football, it was probably Ronald Jones. I think he gave us 350 in a game. Justin Matabuke was a big one as well. Funny story, I was actually a captain for that game, as was he. So we were up there talking, and I'm looking across like, you've got 130 pounds on me. This isn't going to be a fun night for anybody. Baseball-wise, it was Kyle Muller, who was drafted 27th overall by the Atlanta Braves in the 2016-17 draft. So that kid was tremendous. He was the opening day starter for the A's last year, by the way. So turned out pretty well for him.
Hey, Skibrek, who's on this chat a lot, I want to bring up two things for Skibrek. Clint Sterner, and then he went to L. Roberson. So I know all about this one. That's Baytown Lee. Dick Olin, Skibrek, had it rolling at Baytown Lee. And before that, it was Jermaine Alford, who went up to Baylor. He had a quarterback factory at Baytown Lee, and he did a great job with quarterback instruction as a high school coach. But Skibrek, you remember how they ran the double screens where they'd start one way? Dick Olin was one of the first guys in high school to kind of bring this out and set you up. You'd fake screen right and go left, or fake screen left and go come back right. He was running screens on both sides of the field. I'm sure Skibrek remembers that, but that was a hell of a time to play against Baytown Lee, because Baytown Lee is not good now. Back then, they were awesome on offense. One of the better games. I saw Jamal Charles play against them, by the way. Daddy Trill, ATX Boys versus Austin Dogs. Okay, gotcha. So mine is interesting. So mine from a football perspective, I always go back to sitting in the stands when my dad was coaching. And who did I kind of go watch play? And look, I would say to this day, and I was lucky, I saw Vince Young in the Dome, right? I saw Derek Foster at Lamarck, who was a total freak show, the fastest guy at 205 pounds with these big rocking pads. Rod, remember the guys used to run neck roll and run it back? Yeah. Those Lamarck guys, their pads looked like they came up
bouncing. Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, Ben Gay was an unbelievable talent at spring. Unbelievable talent spring. But I've never seen somebody dominate games the way Casey Hampton did at Galveston Ball. And Ryan Vince did it in a different way, so don't get me wrong. But when you line up like Casey Hampton did on the D-line and you had like 54, 64 tackles for loss in one season. I can't remember it's 54 or 64. Wow. It was ridiculous. Like, he literally, you couldn't do anything against Casey Hampton. Anything. Like, he made guys cry in high school. Like, it was total beatdowns of people. That has always been, it is so impressive to me watching Casey Hampton at Galveston Ball. It was just another level of ass beatings that he gave people. I haven't seen many like that before, that where a guy just literally, he could line up against anybody, and he was going to tell you what was going to happen. Then it happened. Then he told you, I told you this was going to happen on the way out the door. Casey Hampton was one of a kind, man. Devontae Hamilton, here's a Drew Tate at Baytown Lee also. Yep. Devontae Hamilton, he has one, sorry. This one here, Pat Mahomes, senior versus Carthage, destroyed us. So, nice. Devontae, yeah. He played at Carthage. You've seen 9 state championships, dude. I think Scott Surrett's the best cat coach going in football in the state of Texas on any level. He's tremendous. He's that guy's awesome. 9 state titles in 15 years. But Pat Mahomes, great story about that, guys. I went to see Pat Mahomes' sophomore year, maybe junior year. I can't remember which it was. I went to watch him in a baseball workout. And at the time, I remember he had played safety his sophomore year, so he didn't know how it was going to work out because they had a lower Division I quarterback ahead of him. But he told me that day, you know, I'll probably just go pro baseball at the end of the day. And I had him underranked. I'll be honest. I had him underranked coming out of high school because of it. I didn't do – that was – I was younger at the time in this game. I didn't do enough homework on that one, honestly. I had him underranked coming out of high school because I kept going back to when I went to see the guy and what he told me. And I should have followed up and done a little bit more on that one as he got a little older. That one was on me. All right, Robert Pope here, a super chat. I was a coach at Gladewater and Palestine. Adrian Peterson is a freshman on varsity. He went for about 350. Yeah, I mean – Adrian Peterson was he's a super freak.
It's grown man right there.
Yep. I mean, you're running 10.4 as a senior at 210 pounds. I mean, that's super freak stuff right there. Oh, Damon Graham, here's a good one. Odell James, Rod. I know you remember Odell James now.
Yeah, no doubt. I remember Odell James.
He was the 6'4", 215, 220-pound dual-threat quarterback before they became popular. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Dual threat quarterbacks. That guy was a really good football player.
Beast out there. Speaking of dual threat quarterbacks, he didn't play football in the end, but you guys remember Carl Crawford?
Oh, yeah.
He was a dual threat QB. I want to say Davis High School.
Jefferson Davis.
Yeah, we played. He was awesome, but he had no help at all. And that was a great athlete, though. He don't play baseball, but he was a great
MLB.
Athlete.
He was great. Yeah,
he was a beast, man. He was a beast.
Yeah. Juan Garza, let me see. Did your super chat go through? Let me see if I get down. Okay, here we go. Let's see. Juan Garza, a couple super chats. Thank you for that. Sorry, I didn't see the
young one.
Is it hard for Texas to recruit DBs because of the decline? What happened with Terrence Brooks? I'll let y'all read through this. Rod Babers, you got a kind of answer for that one. Then he's got a second question.
Sure, Josh. It's under the microscope this year. I do think the coaches in the secondary are probably under – Terry Joseph is probably under a microscope. I do, because I don't think – basically, you every level of the defense, really every position group, offense or defense, has actually shown improvement and progress since Sark has been on campus. I'm not saying that the secondary doesn't have good players, but you really haven't seen them overall as a unit improve since Sark has been there. But every linebacker, D-line, edge expected this year to take a leap. Everybody's really high on how deep they are. But offense, quarterback, O-line, wide receiver, tight end, everything has taken a leap, which is why we praise the development of this staff. I will admit, and I'm going to trust him, I'm a card-carrying member of DBU at Texas. I'll admit, I've been watching the secondary. I watch them as close as anybody. They got good players, but they haven't, as a unit, made the leap yet. That's why this is a big year for them, because talent is no longer an excuse. They got talent.
Malik Muhammad, and experience, right? Talent and experience.
Exactly. Talent and experience. So there's no excuse. They know the system. They know the coverages. They're familiar with the philosophy. They know what's expected of them. If they don't take a leap this year, I imagine, if they're a weakness again, and I don't expect them to be. I expect Sark, he probably will look to maybe, make some moves, reshuffle some things, because there's no excuse for the secondary to be a weakness this year. Maybe they're not a strength. Maybe they shouldn't be a weakness, though. And they last year, there's no doubt, it was one of the weaknesses of the team.
And Juan had a follow-up with that as well. So, Rod,
for the, are you working to, about DB recruiting because of the performance last year? I think that Blake Gideon and Terry Joseph's job is on the line this year. Also, Rod, you never got back to me on Terry Joseph's DB success. Yes, I do. I'm not saying the job is on the line, but like I said, I do think Sark will look to reevaluate some things. Never got back to you on the DB success. It's in these notes somewhere. I promise you. I actually did that research. That was a while ago because I remember we talked about this and brought it up on live stream. I will find the notes. We'll bring it up either on Football Theory or one of the live streams. I'll get that for you. I promise you. I hadn't had that in a while because we hadn't talked about it in a while. My man David Keith Williams says, Rob Babers, realizing you were coached by one DB coach, Coach Aquino, with one voice for the UTB DBs, do you think UT currently having two DB coaches adds to the lack of synchronicity among the UT DBs? Yeah, it's hard to say that because most of the programs around the country have now a cornerbacks coach, yep, and a safeties coach or a pass game coordinator, someone who coordinates the coverages with the pressure packages in the fronts. So I wouldn't say that. I don't think it limits them. I don't. I think it's actually, I would argue it's supposed to help if everybody's on the same page and if they are preaching, you know, the same technique, the same philosophy, you know, if they are disjointed, that may be part of the problem. But my big issue, honestly, with overall with the secondary is that I don't think last year it was about them giving up too many easy completions on simple concepts like inside breaking routes. They have a tough time defending, you know, bunch formations, clustered groups of receivers. We talked about this, and the deep ball. When they took away that stuff and started to play more aggressive coverage, play more bump and run coverage, even on the field side, they took away some of those easy completions and the simple completions. But that's when they gave themselves, they were more vulnerable to the deep ball. Oklahoma State, Washington, they just decided, hey, we're going to throw it deep if you guys are going to play more press. So I think for them now, they got to figure, and we saw in the spring game, right? When they played more press in the spring game, it took Texas up top. A lot of deep passes, a lot of chunk yardage plays. So I think the challenge for Texas will be, you know, they got to find a way to solve some of those issues that have persisted over the last 3 years, because the leverage issues on inside breaking routes has been something that I've been talking about for 2 or 3 years. Closely clubs with groups of receivers, the bunch formations, defending those has been an issue since 2021. Forever. And the deep ball too. So there are systemic issues now. So I understand the frustration of the person in the chat that threw out there the super chat, because these are the same. They're the same issues. Like it's not necessarily anything new that is popping up. To me, it's the same concept that I've been giving them trouble for the last 3 years. And now, even though, you know, you got the same coaches, same message, you should have a talent upgrade where even if it was a talent issue or a foot speed issue and not having the skills and the necessary tools to be able to defend those. Now with the changes you have and the experience, those same systemic issues shouldn't be popping up. If they pop up again this year and you hear me ranting and raving about inside breaking routes and deep ball and, you know, bunch formations, then yes, you got a problem. You got a problem with your coaches in the secondary potentially, because that shouldn't be the case.
CJ, it's time for a super chat for you. Hope you're ready for this. I don't know what you said on a past live stream, but this has me laughing. CJ, has CJ had a chance to reflect on the endowment of the University of Texas? I have no idea what this is about, but it made me laugh.
Yeah, so I had a fun conversation last night about the definition of endowment when I went downstairs and got to hang out with my mom and my dad, just to get an idea of what kind of words I'm saying on these live streams. But we understand now. We understand.
Producer Matthew's losing his mind in the background.
Point is, Texas has money. That's where we were going.
Thought it works.
But hey, it works either way, I guess, right?
I thought it was brilliant wordplay. I thought it was brilliant. It was punny.
I didn't hear it, so I must have missed something.
Oh, it was great. It was great. I support it, man.
I love it. Quick ones. Here's a good one. Is it too early to get excited about Caden Finley? Obviously, 2026 receiver, son of JerMichael Finley, has a Texas offer. He does look good, CJ. And I was told that when Chris Jackson, Tashard Choice, went through there in May, they really liked Caden Finley.
Yeah, he made it to campus about a month ago, actually, right before quiet time official visit started up. He was one of the last 2026 visitors to have seen the University of Texas this summer. So worth noting there. Obviously, you know that he has the ties to the University of Texas as well. Question I have for him is, you know, with his frame continuing to grow, obviously, we know that his father was a great tight end at the university as well. Does he have that top end speed at the wide receiver position, or do you see him spin down into kind of that flex hybrid, you know, kind of that Amari Nyeblack role as a, you know, kind of vertical tight end threat there? That's kind of where I'm sitting right now with Caden Finley. But I saw the video that they threw out of him earlier on social media as well. He looks great. He looks smooth. He's got a great wide receiver trainer as well. So it's going to be interesting to see with 2 years of high school football remaining, just how high his ceiling can go.
Yeah, and I think one of the things that happened in the spring with him is I think going into the spring, a lot, like CJ said, a lot of college coaches were wondering, is this guy going to end up being a tight end? Is he going to be a receiver? I think from what I was told, colleges left Alito this spring thinking this guy's actually going to end up being a wide receiver. So that'll be interesting for CJ and I to monitor on that. Here's a good one. Guys, I think I'll have an opinion on this, but CJ, good host for Jamie French this weekend. I'm going to throw a curveball because I think people are thinking Ryan Wingo, wide receiver, CJ Baxter.
Bang. I was going with it too.
Yeah.
We've just seen it too often, right? I mean, he started with Javian Hilson, did a tremendous job trying to, you know, figure out those Texas ties to the state of Florida, right? That's a big part of this, is figuring out who you connect to. Who's that guy that you can kind of lean on and say, why did you up and leave Florida to come to the University of Texas? Again, last week, who was it? Brandon Brown that he had, Jerry, just kind of being that face and a great representation for the University of Texas as a former five-star himself. That makes sense to me. I love that pick.
Yeah. All right. So we're going to do one more recruiting question. I think we got a good starred question about the team from Nate Seal. All right. Daniel Earp, super chat. Thank you very much, Daniel, for the super chat. Over under 4.5, 5 stars after 2025 final rankings come out. Great question. Great. Very tough question. I do think Lance Jackson with a healthy senior season is probably going to elevate. Yeah, because, you know, some people are going to have 32 5 stars. That's kind of the formula like an NFL draft. I think that's going to give Lance Jackson a shot. Now, ESPN, which I kind of like ESPN, and not because I used to go work there, but we had different levels of 5 stars. It could be a different number every year, just depending on, you know, every year there may not be in our mind 32 5 stars at the time. So some years there was a 13, some years there was 17 or 19 or 20 or even 11 one crazy year. That maybe didn't have the depth we thought looking at it nationally. But I think, look, if DeCorey Moore goes to Texas, that's one, right? I think Lance Jackson's got a shot at it. You know, we'll see what happens with Michael Fasusi. He's going to be ranked in that range. I think Jamie French will maintain a ranking in that range if Texas wins out there. So I think it's a great question, CJ. I don't know if you have an over-under on this, but I'm probably going to say 4. And that'd be a hell of a haul.
4 feels right to me. Again, I mean, the names that you just mentioned, Jerry, just kind of feels right now Texas will hit on a few or most of them, miss on maybe 1 or 2. But right now I like 4. 5's just, I mean, that's a lot, you know, and
yeah,
you know, there's so many talented players across the country that there are probably 25 that Texas hasn't even considered recruiting as heavily as the others that we just brought up. So 4 feels like a tremendous class. It is a tremendous class. Yeah. That feels like where I'm leaning under right now.
Yeah, so I put out a story on texasfootball.com this morning. If you're not a member, go sign up, OTF. Going to be an OTF OG, $39.95 annual subscription, $20 off signing up as an OTF OG. But I had what would a top 3 class look like for Texas? Because that's what the Arch Manning, Anthony Hill, Jonte Cook, Malik Manny Muhammad class was ranked 3. That's been the highest ranked class for Sarkisian. If 4.5 ended up being the number of 5 stars, Texas absolutely is going to be the 3 class. The question is, could they beat out Georgia, Ohio State for the 2 class? But if you get the 4 5-stars in a class of a 24, 25, if Texas goes that high, that's absolutely going to be a top 3 class, maybe top 4.
we had this question on Texas Football earlier, on TexasFootball.com. Who over the last, since Sarkisian got here, has been the most fun recruiting cycle for you to cover?
Oh yeah,
I have this. I answered 2022. I loved my time with Cole Hudson and Connor Robertson.
Yeah.
But 23 was a lot of fun with Jonte, of course, Reuben Owens, Arch, Anthony Hill. Is that the answer for you as well?
23 is for me, and this is from a personal standpoint, because I had – look, I think you guys know I'm a little nuts, right? I can be a little crazy, especially with the driving and going to see kids. But 23 was a blast for me because I was at Cedric Baxter's commitment ceremony. He committed in an evening, one evening. And I think we got out of there. That commitment ceremony ended at like 8 East Coast time, okay? And I was in Orlando at Edgewater High School. And I had called like 4 hours before his ceremony. I called Coach Stewart at Isidore Newman. I said, hey, I'm going to be driving back from Florida to Houston the next couple of days. Could I stop by for one of Arch's practices? He said, sure, no problem. I said, what time y'all practice? He said, 6:30 in the morning, tomorrow. The day after Orlando. So I literally left Cedric Baxter's commitment ceremony at Edgewater High School, drove all night, slept for an hour at a truck stop or a roadside stop, slept for an hour in the back seat of my car, and got back on the road. And I think that was in Biloxi area, Mississippi. Got back in the road on the car so I could get to Isidore Newman by 6 a.m. for their 6:30 practice. So
wow.
I've been nuts before, but that took me to another you're too crazy level. That 23 class was a blast. Cedric Baxter was a blast. Arch Manning, the flip of Anthony Hill, Manny Muhammad. I emceed his commitment ceremony, which was fun, over at Sauk. So I had a lot of fun with that one, but I think that brought out my ultimate crazy, and I hope I don't ever have to go there again. Honestly.
Well, you're the best, Jerry.
Wow.
Yeah. Maybe the dumbest. I don't know.
Wow.
We have this super chat. Nate Seal, we're going to get to yours next, but I want to get to this one because it leads into where we're at now. Sean, thanks for the super chat. In y'all's opinion, why did Texas football pretty much hit rock bottom after the 2009 season? I think that's a great question.
Oh, man.
It's a number of things, right?
It's not just one thing. Yeah.
I would say this. When you mess up quarterback recruiting to the level – that was messed up, that really set you back.
Uh-huh. Yep. I was going to go that way, Jerry. I was going to go with some
poor
evaluations at wide receiver, you know, the offensive line.
O-line, yeah.
2014 to what, 2017, it was abysmal. I remember, you know, making my first or second, you know, appearances as a student at the University of Texas Games. That was the fall of 2017. I'm excited. You know, you got a brand new head coach. Things are hopefully turning up based off of what he's done at previous stops. You're excited, and you see what's going on with a brand new quarterback saying, you know, he's running for his life. You know, what's going on? Are you going to be able to sustain this in the Big 12? Well, the answer was no. And so I think that was the most frustrating thing. On top of that, I don't know if you had a head coach at either stop that put everything together, both behind the scenes with how the program was run and on top of the X's and O's, which is where I think Sarkisian has that leg up because he understands how important it is to be a offensive head coach to call the plays on top of, you know, kind of having his ducks in a row behind the scenes when it comes to running the program, building that culture, understanding that relationships matter, and ultimately having a team that wants to play for one another and the name across the chest versus I don't know if that was necessarily the case for the last decade prior to that. So I'm glad it's where we are currently moving into the SEC versus if this move came at any point over the last 15 years.
Yeah. Hindsight, or, you know, what we say, hindsight, 50-50, well, 2020, whatever. Blah, blah, blah.
2020, right?
Yeah, exactly. 2020. But look, Andrew Luck, no offer. Robert Griffin, no offer. Johnny Manziel, no offer. JT Barrett, no offer. I mean, do we need to keep going or are we done?
Before everybody leaves the screen here.
I think that about wraps it up. I mean, you know, I mean, I always tell the story. The craziest thing is if Art Briles hadn't been hired at Baylor and he had stayed at U of H one more year, I think his 3-deep at quarterback would have been Kevin Kolb, Case Keenum, and Robert Griffin.
Gah.
None of those guys were offered by A&M, Texas, or Oklahoma. Wow. Just saying. There's a lot. All right. So this leads into now. Nate Seal, what is the weakness of this team? Because Texas has been built back by Steve Sarkisian, right? We just talked about the Now we're excited again. Talent coming into the program. 11 guys drafted. Playoff run. Top five ranking again this year. Heisman contender. Maybe more draft picks this year than last year. Three straight top five recruiting classes. But Texas still isn't Georgia. What's the weakness of this team, guys? There's still a build. I'm not saying Texas is Georgia. I'm saying Kirby's 4 years ahead, two national championships. He's had seven, 8 years of top three classes in a row. So Texas is Sark still on the build. So we're obviously still building in this program. Where are the weaknesses in you guys' eyes?
The biggest weakness, and only because I think it's an uncertainty, especially after what we saw a year ago in 2023, it's still the interior defensive line. You have bodies there. I think you can rotate six, maybe seven deep with guys with plenty of experience, plenty of years in competitive, high-level programs. You just don't know how they play together, especially with a pair of them coming in this summer. It's going to be I don't want to say rush together, but they won't have that luxury of playing together in the spring to know what the tendencies are, who plays well next to one another. That's a big part. That was a big strength of the Longhorns a year ago, getting off the field as often and early as they did on third and fourth downs. Will that be something that they'll be able to contend against a Michigan, a Georgia, if they go to the playoff? Those teams that have really talented interior offensive lines with great running games, will they be able to stand up against those guys? You lost the two best interior defensive linemen a year ago. They were basically the core of your defense, the nucleus that started everything on the way back to the secondary. If they show up and have any type of plus to their game, I do think this Texas defense in its entirety will be very talented. They'll have great production. It's just a big question mark right now because you haven't seen them put it on the field together. I mean, real quick, I'm going to go on a quick tangent. If you go back to that spring game, who did you see out there, right? Alfred Collins had a great play. He had the interception for a touchdown. That was about it. We saw Sadir Mitchell. We saw Aaron Bryant. We saw Dre Bledsoe. Tia Savea played pretty well. You didn't see Vernon Broughton because he was getting married. You didn't see Bill Norton. You didn't see Jermaine Lole because he was a late flip. You just don't quite know how they fit in this defense and how they fit together with one another.
Yeah, I agree with you. I think it's an uncertainty. Sark did everything he could to try to fill that void, to remedy that issue via the transfer portal. We just don't know exactly how the pieces are going to fit. I'll go with red zone offense. I mean, right now we have no idea if Sark fixed red zone offense or not. You lost pretty much all your skill positions. And still, I mean, we don't even know why red zone was an issue with you having an NFL running back, an NFL tight end, three NFL drafted wide receivers, and the biggest O-line in the conference, and arguably the best, one of the best quarterbacks in the conference, and a guy who projects to be a future first-round pick. It didn't make sense for Texas to struggle to the point where they were 120th in touchdown percentage in the red zone. The argument could be made it cost them a chance at playing in the national title game, cost them a chance at going undefeated in the regular season, at beating Oklahoma. And I think Sark obviously is a brilliant offensive mind, but even Sark, I mean, didn't fix it. I mean, we only had basically one game where you were an excellent red zone offense. That was kind of Oklahoma State in the Big 12 title game. So I know Sark was probably obsessed with fixing that issue. The trend is what bothers me. You went from top five red zone offense in the country in 2021, your first year. You literally were third, I believe, in the country in touchdown percentage in the red zone. And every year, although the team has gotten better, the team is more talented, the people are more familiar with the system, more continuity than ever, the red zone offense has actually gotten worse. It's like 90th in the country, I think 96th in the country overall in red zone offense, 120th in touchdown percentage red zone. So I'm thinking that it's kind of a post-Bijan Rojo hangover, along with some multifactorial things like the offensive line, the push of it, Quinn not getting through progression quick enough, timing with the receivers. Just a lot of things thrown in there as an amalgamation of kind of ineptitude in the red zone. So it still didn't cost Texas, a chance to play in the college football playoff. But if you want to win a national title and that's the goal this year, yep, you better fix that.
Yeah.
That's so worth more than three.
To add to what you guys said, I don't know if it's, you know, weaknesses. I think for me, questions to be answered, add to what you guys said. Pass pro, a right side of the offensive line. First-year starter Cam Williams, DJ Campbell, better run blocker than pass pro guy. How are those guys going to hold up in tandem? I think Jake Majors, I said going into the last year at Bama, Jake Majors had that most important job on the field in that game, in that environment they were walking into. I think at Michigan, Jake Majors' job, keeping all these guys. So first-year starter Cam Williams, DJ Campbell, second year. How much has he improved in pass pro? How are they going to work in tandem? I think Jake Majors got a huge job in front of him at Michigan, keeping all those guys on the same page, organized on the offensive line. So I want to see how the right side does in pass pro. I know later in the season, as Cam gets more experience, as DJ continues to get more experience, I think they're going to do well. How are they going to be early in the season? And then one for me, Rod's corner depth. You know, injury-wise, I think that they need a young guy to step up. Even with the addition of Javion Cole, they need a Warren Roberson, even somebody you're not expecting, a Santana Wilson. They need somebody to step up so Texas doesn't have to make a Jahdae Barron the corner move.
That's a great point.
I think they need somebody to step up at corner. I actually think the interior D-line may. I'm not saying it's on the level of next year. I think they're actually may surprise. And the reason I think they may surprise, Rod, I think the edge pressure is going to change the way teams have to attack Texas defensively. And if you can create – if you become a 39 or 40 sack team, if Trey Moore and Colin Simmons change the game for Texas on the edge with an older Baron Sorrell and an older Ethan Burke, man, the interior D-line is going to get more favorable matchups at times.
Yeah. The key to that, I totally agree with you guys. The key to that is you got to win on early downs to get them in the passing downs.
Yes.
I mean, you got to figure out a way to stop the run, because I agree with CJ. If I'm going up against Texas, I'm running up the middle. I'm running up the interior. I'm going to test out your new D tackles.
Prove that they can stop it.
Yeah. I'm going to test your new D tackles. I'm going to test that off-ball linebacker because Jalen Ford's gone now. I'm going to test that young buck, Anthony Hill, because Anthony Hill kind of reminds me of Micah Parsons. Elite pass rusher, elite athlete. Let's turn him into a run stopper and see what kind of run stuffer he is and run stopper. So I think teams are going to try to run in Texas. So, yes, I think the edges – will make a huge difference. I do think it's a different kind of pressure. You'll get more negative splash plays, but the Kim Kardashian, Nicki Minaj, Serena Williams size, Cardi B size, making the same size, but you better stop the run on early downs to get them into passing downs. If you don't, it's going to be a long day when you go to Michigan, long day when you play Georgia, as CJ mentioned, those teams that got those really elite interior offensive lines. And Georgia's got one of those, and Michigan will have one too. That's just hardball football.
Jerry, I got a question for you. Rod and I broke down Michigan. We did a way too early kind of look into what that Michigan team is. I want to get your thoughts on the quarterback situation at Michigan, whether it be Alex Orji, whether it be whoever else they got. We've talked about it. Listen, I think if Texas gets out early, it's going to be difficult for Michigan to come back with the style of game that they want to play. Now, I do think Alex Orji is talented. I think that he can beat you with his legs. I do question how accurate he is, you know, kind of similar to what we saw Jalen Milroe with that first step back, you know, kind of hit your back foot and go to your first option. Texas jumped that twice. If that's the same game plan for Michigan against Texas through the air, I think Texas is going to have more success there as well. But again, does Michigan have the guy right now at quarterback that intimidates you?
I love the setup. And it's different, of course. I love the setup of playing Michigan week 2 versus week 9. I love that Texas is playing him early. Like, I love that Texas is playing Jalen Milroe in his second career start. Alex Orji, I think they're going to do a lot of RPO with him. I think they're going to have to, right? If he's going to be the guy. I think the number 2 guy is going to throw it better than he does. And I watched a little bit of the spring game. I thought the number 2 guy is actually going to be a better natural passer. But if Orji's the guy, they're going to try to – power run and RPO Texas, right? And they're going to try to control the clock, condense the game. And what's interesting to me is, you know, they lost. And Michigan's recruited good on the offensive line. So the guys who are backups have been playing against NFL guys in practice every day on that D-line for Michigan. But that's still going to be a lot of these guys' second start of their career. So I like where Texas is when they're playing Michigan more than anything is you catching them early Are there any questions within this team about, hey, Harbaugh's gone, everybody's gone, we like Sharon, but what is this the same? I mean, I just think there could be so much going on at Michigan. But I think, look, Michigan's going to try to run the ball, condense the game. They're going to try to do the passing game through the RPO. I think that's what they're going to do. I will be interested. If you can take Colston Loveland out of the game in your Texas, can Alex Orji beat you throwing the ball outside the hashes and out, down the numbers?
That's a good point. I wanted to bring this comment from Pablo. I thought this was funny. Yeah. I mean, Jermaine Lole, old. Alfred Collins, old. Bill Norton, those guys are pretty old. And that's part of the reason why I'm comfortable with the bodies now in the defensive tackle room, because they've been around the block. But, Jerry, to your point about the quarterbacks, I thought the number two for Michigan, or Michigan, hit his receivers in stride and underneath crossing routes a little bit better. Orji showed accuracy when he was throwing to a spot, whether it be a comeback, a curl, you know, stop routes on the outside. That's where I think Texas can come in and jump it a little bit. We saw it again against Alabama last year. That's exactly where Jahdae Barron and Jaron Thompson made their bread, with interceptions there. So, again, we got what, almost 2.5, 3 more months of kind of theorizing and doing our own game planning for that game, but it's going to be a lot of fun. So, I mean,
this is what I think we're 74 days away from the season. So 81 days to Michigan, 81 days to the Michigan game. We're inside 3 months, guys. Hey, we have a super chat we're going to get to. Then I'm going to let Rod tell us once again about Andy Ludeke, our sponsor, Longhorn Live Stream, because we don't give this guy enough love. Or we do off camera, but we don't on camera. Oh, not that one. Sorry. We already read that one. Botex knows. For Matthew, who makes all this happen behind the scenes, hook him, Matthew. Hey. AI. Matthew is the best producer. We love him. He does a great job. His graphics are awesome. His Amazing. Ability to bring up puddles, awesome. His ability to deal with me is even better. So, he's the best going. All right, Rod, why don't you tell everybody about Andy Ludeke? Then we're going to take 3, 4, 5 questions and let everybody enjoy their Bravo after this.
Yeah, Andy Ludeke, also one of the best, and we appreciate him sponsoring our Wednesday night live stream. If you're looking to diversify, you may be someone like me that has their hands in a lot of businesses. Andy can help you diversify by finding you businesses that will fit your time allotment and financial goals. If you're stuck in the corporate rat race with 2 weeks PTO and no control over the money you make or your schedule in general, call Andy. He will take you through a process to help you find a business that will fit your skill sets and financial goals. Franchise ownership isn't for everyone, but if you have a desire to take control of your destiny, call Andy today or email him at andy@myperfectfranchise.net. That's andy@myperfectfranchise.net, or give him a call, 404-973-9901. Thank you very much to Andy Ludeke and his team for sponsoring our Wednesday night live stream here on Texas Football.
We're about to let Matthew show his work here. I think we're going to bring up the graphic for the visitors as we kind of close out the show with some 2, 3, 4 questions. And we got, I've got one from Kirk Copeland too, by the way. Rod, why don't you answer this? While Here we go. Matthew's graphics work. Here we go. So midweek officials, so recruiting wise, we got the midweeks right now. We talked about that. Dorian Brew, Dejon Lee, Nathan Tillman. Rod, we like safeties that are 185 and run 10-7 that actually play safety, right? We love like those guys. Not that you move the safety and hope he can play safety, but actually plays safety. Those are your 3 midweek visitors. Then we have 18 visitors coming in this weekend for officials. Obviously, a number of commitments. KJ Lacy, who's competing out of the Elite 11 tonight. They've begun the second day of that this afternoon in SoCal. James Simon committed, Jamie French, Kalik Locke, and Amari Winston committed. Nick Townsend, who we're going to watch his huddle after this and talk about Nick Townsend, because I think it's a huge recruitment for Texas that people maybe not talk about enough. Michael Fasusi, obviously a big one. He'll be on campus with 3 commitments. Jackson Jordan and Devin Coleman. Also, Isaiah Coleman, preferred walk-on D lineman, the triplets. He will be on campus for an official visit. Zion Williams, a big one for fans, because he'll go to LSU, if not Texas. DJ Sanders, more of a developmental D-line, down-the-line guy, but he's got talent. Elijah Barnes, Madden Framo, we've talked about. Cade Phillips is a big one. The DB out of Hightower, LSU, Corey Raymond, selling corner. Texas, I think there's some things in Texas corner with that in their corner with that recruitment, so to speak. But we'll see what happens. Aiden Anning, love him at cornerback coming in with all his family out of Ruston, Louisiana. Devin Williams, the Auburn commitment. All right, guys, let's talk a little bit about Nick Townsend coming in. So we always talk about all the premium position guys. But Nick Townsend, I think, is a huge recruitment this weekend for the Longhorns. Cody Armstrong off the board to A&M. Texas wants two tight ends in the class. They have Amari Winston committed currently. They brought in Caleb Edwards, who's a big frame national recruit tight end who was at Auburn and at Alabama after Texas. He goes to Oregon this weekend. But then Nick Townsend, and we're about to play this huddle, and Nick Townsend's really grown on me over the last few months. I think this guy, Rod, CJ, is one of the best prospects in America. 6'3 and a half, 226, ran 10.92, 100 meters, fully automatic time at the district track meet. And he's a physical guy off the edge too. But this is going to be one of the better prospects in the country when all's said and done.
Wow. So is he a tight end?
He's a tight end. Okay. And it's an Alabama-Texas battle with A&M trying to be the third and seriously in the fight. He also visited USC. But you watch, he is not just a pass-catching tight end. He is a physical football player.
That's my favorite part of his game, Jerry, is at the tight end spot, the question is, how much of a playmaker were you? Do you need to be converted to a tight end? Kind of the Jatavion Sanders route where we saw it take some time to really find that wants and desire to, go hit somebody bigger than you. I'm not sure if we ever actually really got it with Jatavion Sanders, but for a guy that's played tight end for a long time and still has all these tools to, just brush off four or five tackles right there and find the end zone, and then to turn around and say, oh, yeah, let's get some outside zone going so I can put someone on their back. That's what you like at the tight end spot, and that's exactly – why I think Nick Townsend has shot up board since the middle of 2023 when things really started to heat up in his recruitment to move that well.
He looks like JerMichael Finley as an athlete, does he?
I was going to say, man, that's a nice comparison there, too. You just don't see tight ends move like that. Yeah. You said 10.9, and you see it translates too. Sark's been looking for a tight end with speed, right? Amari Nyblack is the kind of speed that he wants, but he doesn't have the ideal kind of frame and overall skill set that he wants, right? He wanted that with Jaleel Billingsley? Was that his name when he first brought him in? That's kind of the same, but he doesn't have the frame to be the blocker that he wants. Sark, this young man, if he's got that kind of speed, but also the frame and the physicality. Even with JT, they had to seem to kind of try to teach him the physicality of the position. This young man, he's got the physicality down pat. I mean, there's no doubt. And he's a freak of an athlete. So
yeah, I mean, look, and he's wearing a towel that's like 4 feet long, and he's still moving around faster than everybody. It's like he's got a flag behind him running. But look, that's the thing, is how physical he is. And he was bigger when I went to see him in person than you think. So at that district meet, 6'3 and a half, 226 pounds when he ran 10.92 in the 100 meters. That's a fully automatic time. The only guy that beat him was Tanook Hines, I believe, in district, who ran 10.35, and he dusted his boy. But Nick Townsend, to run 10.92 at 226 and be a tight end, very rare, guys, in his physical on defense. Like, you wish Jatavion Sanders was this physical on defense, right? This is a guy who, when he's called upon the block in college, there's going to be no hesitation in his game.
Yep, that was almost too much finesse in JT's game because he was out wide all the time. And as a skill player, this guy, there's physicality, less finesse, more physicality. You can see the speed, too. I mean, that's on defense. I mean, he brings the hammer with
him. I mean, look, for people that may not know these teams in Houston, he ran through five KD guys. He's playing against Westfield, who's pretty fast, right? He plays against fast teams, and there he is making – look at the body control on the back shoulder ball, adjusting to the ball in the air there. They play really good competition, and this guy I think is going to be a senior riser, is going to end up being – it wouldn't shock me, he's not one of the top 50 prospects in the country. Maybe knock on the door to be a five-star player at the end of the day, because he's going to play both ways once again. and looking at playing Wildcat quarterback. He is probably the most underappreciated recruit in the state of Texas and maybe the most underrated, underappreciated recruit Texas has on the board right now, just because he's not a premium position guy. But there you go. Thank you, Matthew. That is Wyatt Earp says, what's up with the towel, though? Hey, that looked like something from your playing days, Rod, when guys
– it's old school. Yeah, big towel. That's old school, man. I kind of like the swagger. It takes some swagger to have your own style like that, man. I do. I like this dude, though, man. That's an impressive athlete. He really is. All around. Yeah, ball player. Great point.
Ball player. All right, guys, we're going to end on that. Thank you for the over 5,000 people that have joined this Longhorn live stream tonight. Yes, Jay, W Crunch, Nick Townsend is a groan, and you could probably put a word in there in between there, man. So thank you very much for Rod, for CJ, for producer Matthew, for all the super chats. Thank you very much, guys. We appreciate you guys so much. There's Matthew. There's the leader. Hey, Big Hulk said he had a beach towel on. And after watching that video, Texas fans are hoping that's the biggest UT towel they've ever seen as a senior playing at Duquesne there. So thank you very much to everybody. Derek Weisner, there you go. Uncle Weisner there. Thank you very much for joining in. All 5,300 plus you guys. We'll be back for coffee.
And hey, is Uncle Weisner, Uncle Weisner related to Trey Weisner?
Yeah, that's Uncle Weisner.
Oh, dude, Uncle Weisner, I talked to Trey today at 30 Longhorns.
Hey, well, we got time. We got time, Rob. Let's not end it. Talk about that. Talk about Trey.
Just real quick, super impressed. I was going to bring him up, actually, when we talked about leadership and guys showing leadership on the team. He is one of them dudes. Remember, so I kept bringing him up unsolicited this past spring, complimenting Trey Weisner. I finally got a chance to talk to him. Natural leader. Talked about how the reason that he stayed home is because he's a big brother and he wanted to be close to his family. He's got little siblings. He's like, no, I got to be close to the fam. He's like, because they got to see the example. I said, this guy has been setting the example, you know, for his family. And now he's trying to set the example in that running back room. I came away really impressed with Trey Weisner, man. And I did ask him, and I won't get into the details. I asked him off camera and on camera about the pony package. Let's just say we will see more pony package. Trey Weisner will be in some of those more exotic pony package looks. So I'm looking forward to that. But Trey Weisner, been really impressed. Okay. And I came away once again, that running back room has so much leadership that I can't say enough about it. I think it's probably one of the most impressive position rooms in the country, regardless of what program you're talking about.
All right, well, that's a great way to end it. All right, for Rod Babers, for CJ Vogel, for producer Matthew, I'm Jerry Hamilton. Thank you very much for joining in the Longhorn live stream tonight. Coffee and football in the morning. We're scheduled to have a very special guest. Sometimes it falls through, but this would be a very special guest in the morning. And tomorrow afternoon, we have Elijah Barnes scheduled to join Winning Drive with Rod and CJ. Nice. And Coach Shipley, and Friday Longhorn live stream between 1 and 2, Lance Jackson is scheduled to join us for that one Friday. So we'll see if that happens. Sometimes guys end up with some conflicts, but tomorrow morning, I'm very, very excited for this potential very special guest. So thank you to all. We'll talk to you guys tomorrow.
Welcome.